Catherine Rogers is a research assistant at the Silent Spring Institute with expertise in toxicology and risk assessment for public health. She is currently working on a comprehensive and critical review of primary epidemiological research articles to update the Silent Spring Institute's database of scientific research on environmental factors that may increase breast cancer risk. Additionally, she works on Silent Spring Institute's water quality research to better understand sources of emerging contaminants in ground and drinking water. Thank you very much.
Hi, so my name is Catherine Rogers. As Tara's introduced me, I'm on the research staff at Silent Spring Institute, and today I'm going to be talking about a review that I've been working on with Dr. Julia Brody, who is Silent Spring Institute's director. And this is a review on epidemiologic studies published between 2006 and 2013 that examine environmental chemicals and breast cancer risk. And I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. So as an overview of what I'm going to be talking about today, I'm going to start off talking about global incidence and mortality of breast cancer, and then I'm going to talk about the types of environmental chemicals that we're interested in, how we conducted the review and the challenges faced, and then I'm going to delve into some specific advances that have been made in the field, and then talk about future priorities and areas that I think we should focus on moving forward. So this is a map of breast cancer incidence. You can see the countries that are darker have higher breast cancer incidence rates compared to the countries that are lighter in color. Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women worldwide. And since 1980, notable increases have been seen in Central America, South and Southeast Asia, and in the Middle East in breast cancer incidence. This slide looks at breast cancer mortality. Hopefully you can see there's a light yellow line at the top that is breast cancer mortality in the United States since 1980. So we can see that it has been decreasing, but there's a general trend of increasing mortality in developing countries. And this really signals the need to look towards prevention strategies. So in this review, it's important to keep in mind that about 27% of breast cancers are due to heritable genes, with just 5 to 10% of those due to the high-risk BRCA gene mutations. So that leaves an overwhelming number of breast cancers that have no family history, which leads us to look to the environment and leads us to believe that there are ways to prevent breast cancer. So what I'm talking about today, this review is actually an update from a review that Dr. Brody published in 2003. She published it in 2007, and it looks at environmental epidemiological studies of environment in breast cancer through 2006 that was published in a supplement in Cancer. And in that same issue, Silent Spring Institute also published what has become known as the breast cancer list of 216 mammary carcinogens. And so what are the types of chemicals that we're interested in? This is the basic framework. We think about three types of chemicals. One, mammary carcinogens that directly damage DNA. An example of this would be ionizing radiation. We also think about endocrine disruptors that can act as tumor promoters. So an example of this would be tamoxifen or hormone replacement therapy, specifically chemicals that mimic estrogen, which is a known breast cancer risk factor. And we also think about endocrine disruptors as developmental toxicants that can alter susceptibility. An example of this would be DES, which was prescribed to pregnant women in the 1940s through 1970s. And the daughters of these women, when they were exposed in utero, later in life have had increased risk of a rare vaginal cancer and breast cancer. So this really demonstrates that there are risk factors across the life cycle. Breast tissue goes through three distinct periods of development: in utero, puberty, and at the completion of the first full-term pregnancy. So we think about these chemicals that can alter mammary development and make them more susceptible. So here are some examples of mammary carcinogen exposures. These, unfortunately, are everyday exposures that we have to air pollution, flame retardants that are used in our furniture. Some specific chemicals here would be benzene, 1,3-butadiene, and polyaromatic hydrocarbons, which are found in air pollution. And PFOA is a perfluorinated compound which is found in nonstick applications such as cookware. And here are some examples of exposures to endocrine disrupting compounds. Again, these are in our everyday environment, and here are some examples of the types of chemicals that we think about. So in order to conduct this review, we did a systematic search in PubMed with 106 different search terms. Here are some examples of our search terms that we looked for. These are specific mammary carcinogens and exposures known to contain these mammary carcinogens of interest. So in Dr. Brody's publication in 2007, there were many methodological challenges that were identified in these epidemiological studies. So we wanted to pay particular attention to how new studies have addressed these challenges. So was the study designed in an appropriate manner to look at the risk of environmental chemicals? How was the exposure measure ascertained? There are difficulties here. We can't ask people what's in your air. But there are strengths to, for example, using biomonitoring, looking at geographic information systems, among other exposure measures. So we found 85 eligible studies to include in this review. A few of them looked at early life exposures, and a limited number of studies analyzed risk among non-white populations. And here's just a graphic to show where these studies clustered. So mostly they were in developed countries. And the chemical study remained limited. There was a focus on organochlorine, pesticides, PCBs, and dioxins, as well as a number of studies that looked at air pollution and specifically PAHs. And you'll see that a number of studies looked at occupation. I just want to point out that about half of these didn't control for confounding, but they're still important to look at. And so now I'll talk about the key developments. What have we learned, and how well did these new studies deal with methodological problems identified? So I'm going to start off talking about PCBs. PCBs are it's a group of chemicals that were used in electrical equipment. There's 109 different congeners, and you can see by looking at this table here, there are they have a number of different characteristics and different activities. So some of them are estrogenic. Some of them tend to act like dioxin, which has been shown to increase breast cancer risk. And some of them induce a class of enzymes called CYP enzymes. These are phase one enzymes used in phase one metabolism. And in addition to metabolizing many foreign substances, including PCBs, they also metabolize estrogen. In Dr. Brody's 2007 publication, a number of studies had identified women with faulty CYP enzymes and high PCB exposure were at an increased risk to breast cancer. So we wanted to pay particular attention to these PCBs. Overall, in the studies that were published on PCBs, there were inconsistent results, but that's probably a reflection of the fact that there were inconsistent exposure measures and different study designs. One study that was particularly well suited to look at PCBs was conducted by Barbara Cohn. So here's our history of PCB use in the United States. And in this cohort from Barbara Cohn, she had access to blood from women who had just given birth during the same period of time that overlapped with peak PCB use in the United States. And these women were followed through 1980 or until they reached age 50 for breast cancer. So this is important because it's looking at women with early life exposures. So this graph right here shows an odds ratio. So this is the risk, or this is the odds of developing breast cancer with having these exposures versus not having the exposure. And the exposure here is one congener. That's PCB203, which fits into the CYP enzyme-inducing class of PCBs. So we can see there's a dose-response curve here where women who are in the highest quartile of PCB203 exposure have the highest breast cancer risk. And now because PCBs don't occur in just one congener, they were produced as commercial mixtures. This study also looked at the net effect of exposure to multiple PCBs, so you can see that the risk is attenuated somewhat when looking at the effect of the net effect of PCB. So some of them decrease breast cancer risk, while some of them increase breast cancer risk, but you can still see that in the highest quartile there's an increased risk. Another study conducted by Recio Vega, this is a case control study in a population of Mexican women. This study also looked at PCBs according to their activity groupings, and this found, consistent with Barbara Cohn's study, that the highest exposure to the class of CYP enzyme inducers resulted in higher breast cancer risk among premenopausal women. And the study also included postmenopausal women, and so we can see a different profile of activity where it's the estrogenic PCBs that resulted in higher breast cancer risk. So next I'm going to move on to DDT, and again, this is a study that was published by Barbara Cohn, and it's so here we have our history of DDT use in the United States, and this is the same cohort of women, so it's again looking at women with early life exposures to DDT and followed through 1998, and this study found that in women who were exposed before 14 years of age, in the highest tertile of exposure, they experience the highest breast cancer risk. This study is important because it did look at DDT, which is estrogenic, and not DDE, which is an antiandrogen. So the studies that have been published that look at DDE have seen no risk with breast cancer, and that's consistent with the fact DDE may not be the most appropriate measure to look at. So next I'm going to talk about some occupational studies. Occupational studies are very useful to look at because workers tend to have high exposures, although historically this hasn't worked out that well for looking at exposures to women in particular. But a study published by Jim Brophy is a particularly strong study that looked at women in an industrialized region in Detroit and Canada. And a number of major work sectors and minor work sectors were examined over different periods of time in a woman's life. And this led to some really interesting results that need to be examined, although we still have, there's still limitations from this study, so we don't have all the pieces. For example, there was a higher breast cancer risk observed in women who worked in plastics, auto plastics manufacturing, but not in other types of plastics work, so this may have to do with a small number of women who are included in the study. Here on the left, you can see the results from this study conducted by Jim Brophy, an increased risk seen in auto plastics manufacturing and food canning. You can see there's also increased risk that were observed from plastics production among other studies, as well as work with auto manufacturing, and also a study looked at male auto mechanics. And over here in purple, you can see ethylene oxide. This is a study that looked at occupational exposure to the sterilant ethylene oxide in two medical device plants. So there's an increased risk of breast cancer among that cohort. And among women who were exposed to nylon fibers before age 36, they had an increased risk of developing breast cancer. Postmenopausal breast cancer. So next I'm going to jump into some studies that looked at air pollution and traffic. This is especially worth highlighting since IARC classified outdoor air pollution as carcinogenic to humans just 2 weeks ago. And we know that auto exhaust and air pollution have mammary carcinogens such as ones I talked about, PAHs, benzene, and 1,3-butadiene. So of these studies that were published, they had positive results, and a number, well, actually, of these studies that were published, all of them looked at, they used GIS or location to look at environmental measurements and participants' residence as exposure classifications. And I wanted to point out some of these studies that looked specifically at PAHs and genetic variability. So these studies looked at the presence of PAH DNA adducts and in the presence of these DNA mutations. So overall, we can see that it looks like a lot of these, their risk is right around one, but there are many that are worth looking at. And one limitation of these studies is that looking at PAH DNA addicts doesn't necessarily tell us what types of PAHs or the exposure source, that we don't know if they're necessarily coming from cigarette smoking or auto exhaust. They're worth looking at. And so finally, I want to talk briefly about consumer product studies. So a number of the chemicals of concern for breast cancer really bring our attention to consumer products. And briefly, I'm going to talk about just a few studies that have looked at these. So two studies looked at phthalate exposure and breast cancer risk. One was a self-report study. One was a case control study that unfortunately looked at phthalate exposure among the cases were in a hospital setting and the controls were from a residential setting. So since we know that hospital stays can result in higher phthalate exposures, this isn't necessarily a good comparison group. One study looked at the use of air fresheners and cleaning products and found a statistically significant association with cleaning product use and breast cancer risk. This is interesting to look at, although we can't put all of our weight or our confidence in self-report studies. One study in Greenland looked at exposure to perfluorinated compounds. And while cases did have higher exposure to these perfluorinated compounds, they also had higher exposure to a number of other persistent organic pollutants, so we can't necessarily tease apart what the causality is there. And two studies looked at contaminated drinking water. These are interesting because they are focused in an area that relies on septic systems, so the wastewater is contaminated with a lot of these consumer product chemicals. So I've just talked about all the things that we have learned, but we still face a number of limitations. There's a lack of research on what the President's Cancer Panel, the Institute of Medicine, and the Interagency Breast Cancer and Environmental Research Coordinating Committee are recommending, which is to look specifically at chemical exposures. We should continue to look to the power of cohort studies that have blood samples and also occupational studies where there's highly exposed women. And I think that the take-home lesson from this is really that we don't have enough time to wait around for women to develop breast cancer, to determine what's causing it. We really need to pay better attention to the animal evidence. And one research method that's allowing us to do this is high throughput testing, which allows us to screen hundreds of chemicals at a time so we can flag the ones that are causing DNA damage in cellular assays and take a look at those. And I'll end with this slide, which is the framework for prevention evidence, where if there's a biological mechanism that's known, and we know that we have human exposure, that really is the basis for action, and we can't wait for proof, because we're never going to find it, as shown by these studies with humans. Thank you very much, and this is a screenshot from our website. When Tara introduced me, she said that I'm working on updating this database of epidemiological studies, so what we have on our website right now is through 2006 and early. In 2014, we should have the rest of these studies that I've been talking about through 2013. Thank you.
So, again, we have time for one or two questions.
Yeah. First of all, congratulations. This is a very comprehensive study. I think it brings up very important information. I was just wondering if you came across any study in the Caribbean.
I didn't. Yeah.
Did you have to tell us with the study with the PCBs and the breast cancer, did you look at whether the women had a history of breastfeeding or not?
I would have to get back to you. I believe that was included in the Barbara Cohen study, but I'm not sure.
Because the levels in the woman will drop.
Right. After breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. Thanks. All right.
Thank you, Catherine.